All right, King, enough about how the power ratings work and why I have teams where they are. Let's get to someone else who has his own power rating model and is very involved in the college football analytics and betting space. It's someone we've had our eye on for a long time, King, and we really wanted to get on the podcast, so we are thrilled to have him. His name is Nick Lekansky, but you probably know him on Twitter or X as Room44Bets. Nick, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's honestly pretty surreal being invited here. I still kind of can't believe it. It's my first podcast too, so I'm kind of nervous. I'll try to keep my language clean, keep your edits to a minimum. We'll see how it goes. So yeah, as Kelly said, my name's Nick Lekansky. I'm in Birmingham, Alabama, and I'll go ahead and out myself here because, you know, everybody's going to assume anyway, but I am an Alabama fan. My freshman year there, already down a couple notches
on our guest rating for that reason alone.
Oh, that's bad. That's bad news for Kinger, Nick. I'm not going to lie. Yeah.
I understand. I know we get a bad rap. It's all good. I get it. My freshman year there was actually Nick Saban's first year. So had a pretty good college football experience while I was actually in school. Although most of my extended family went there too. So some of my earliest college football memories are, you know, DeBose, Franchione, Shula eras. So good fun times there. I understand how good we've had it lately. So,
well, and at least you got one thing going for you. And I will say, I give my friends credit too. They attended school there, and I don't, for the most part, have problems with people, fans who root for teams that they grew up liking. Kelly is a prime example of that. I had to get over that quickly early in the relationship. But
Nick, Alabama, actually attended
the school there. Birmingham, Alabama guy. Look, yep. No quarrels with me there. I'm just going to dog on your team, you know, and you're used to that by now. But you can stand. You got a lot of ammo to defend yourself with that. That's for sure.
Yep. And I mean, I think it's cool living here in Birmingham too, because they're always like top of the ratings for just like college football in general. So
right,
you know, I'm always surrounded, like always, you know, talking college football with people around. So I guess a little bit more about how I actually got here. So I went to the business school at Alabama, and my first 6 years after school were with a construction company. But I always loved and been good with technology. So I did my own side projects like iPhone apps, websites, that kind of stuff. And so I actually started a little company for that side hustle a while back called Room 44 Multimedia, which is where my Room 44 handle comes from.
There it is. I was curious.
Unfortunately, Kelly, I don't really have a cool like story. I've thought about making one up before, you know, involving like a sob story or something, but it kind of made me feel
bad. I like the
truth,
man. So, I like the truth. It's good.
I just came up. I was like doodling one day and came up with the 44 logo. I was like, hey, I can't think this looks cool. I'm not a very artistic person, but this looks artsy. So I just kind of ran with it, and it evolved from there. So anyway, I moved career paths and went to a tech startup as a project manager. Still doing that today. So not really an engineer, but I have a good mind for software, always coming up with ideas and ways to exercise that part of my brain. So, yeah.
Nick, you and I have a lot in common, I think. We're not the most artsy guys, but we got the math and science piece down. I am actually by trade an engineer, not practicing or anything now. But yeah, we have some similarities, I think. So it's really not a surprise to me that we find ourselves kind of in this similar space of college football power ratings and analytics. So we have a little bit of that background now. And we know, of course, you can't go to Alabama and not be a college football fan, especially right. In this last 20 years or so. But talk to us a little bit more about, how'd you get going with your model? What have you found the most enjoyable? What's been the most frustrating thing for you about the model? What's a big problem that you're trying to solve? I mean, you don't have to give away any trade secrets. Lord knows I don't. So, but just what, tell us a little bit more about your model. Cause I'm just curious, as someone who's doing the same thing, you know, I'm always trying to learn and get better. And I think that you have a unique background and perspective that I can certainly learn from.
Yeah. I think, I'll get into like the specifics in a little bit, but I want to touch on your question about, you know, the frustrations. I think the frustrations for me these days is like, I started off with a pretty clear goal, like the Room 44 bets thing, right? It's like pretty clear goal of like, I want to make sure I have like good bets and win consistently against the spread, that kind of thing. And as I've gotten more and more into it, I've like gotten more into like trying to make sure I have a good MAE and that kind of thing. And so I kind of struggle with that a lot. Like I have found in the past, like I had pretty good performance, even with a pretty terrible MAE, but now I'm like just trying to get my MAE better and that kind of thing. So that's been a struggle for me really. But like to get into the predictions and methods. So,
and for all the, Nick, I don't mean to cut you off, but for all the listeners out there, mainly me, to be honest, can you explain what MAE is?
King over there Googling real quick. I was like, oh boy.
I was 100% Googling what is that right now.
Yeah. Sorry. So it's basically like, your average error, like, so how far away all your predictions are from the actual line of the game. So like, I think, you know, if you're trying to get an edge, like you might be way off on the prediction, like way off on the score, but against the spread, you could still have a really good record, you know, like, whereas like a more mathy person is like potentially just trying to get as close as they can to that, like what was the actual final spread of the game. So, yeah, hopefully that
it does clarify.
Cleared it up a little
Sorry
bit.
To interrupt your train of thought there. No, you're Please good. Continue. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have three different machine learning models. I have one for spreads, one for totals, and one for win percentages. And so those are kind of the main ones that I use for my predictions. So I have, you know, I've taken a bunch of historical data, gotten all kinds of stuff from it, put it in a machine learning model, and just, you know, you kind of tweak. You choose this stat and leave this stat off, choose this one, leave it off, and kind of back test until you get a good result. So they take in between 30 and 50 different stats to output each prediction. And I think it's interesting to me because it brings kind of an unbiased numbers-based opinion into what outcomes that previously similar matchups have produced, right? So that's what it boils down to, is like when a team like this one has faced a team like this one, what kind of happens based on the numbers? So the art's making sure you pick stats that are actually predictive, right? And not ones that have kind of coincidentally led to an outcome when it didn't really actually play into the game.
That's the big thing right there, Nick, what you just said. And I'm sorry to cut you off, because so many people over the years have said to me, well, like, no, you don't have an objective model because you're making decisions about what the inputs are. And my response to that is, okay, smart guy. Yeah, you're right. Because any single process that's out there, yes, you are going to have at some point in it, at the beginning, the middle, the end, a human has to be putting in some sort of input. And what we're doing is we're being smart about what inputs are we selecting? How are we weighting them? And yes, we're going every summer and doing back testing and figuring out what are the key components? What are the key factors? How much do we weight them? Why are we weighting them this much? What impact does this have on the ultimate accuracy of the predictive model? So yeah, I always get that wise guy who says, no, you're not being objective because this, that, or the other. And I'm just like, all right, buddy, sure. If you want to die on that hill, I'll let you die on that hill. For all intents and purposes, we are doing these things. We're making these art decisions, as you said there, Nick, with the end goal in mind of trying to remove as much bias as we can and make the model as objective as we can, to basically make ourselves and make the model blind from logos, brands, and teams, and just see these numbers. Okay, here are the numbers, model. What do you make of them? And then we come in and assign, okay, this data point, that's actually assigned to Alabama. This data point, that's assigned to Purdue. But the model doesn't know that that's Purdue or that's Alabama or that's Ohio State. So yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm glad you kind of set it up that way and did. You're open and upfront about, yeah, we do make decisions. And yes, we do have to decide what goes into it because, yeah, like, no kidding. No duh. Of course you do. Otherwise, you're just sitting there with a computer and nothing's running. Nothing's happening. You're just looking at a screen, right? So I appreciate that.
Yep. Yeah.
So Nick, you said, you know, the betting aspect for you is obviously a big part of this. So talk to me kind of about your history there. Have you always been a sports gambler? Does that go back to your days in college, or kind of what influenced you to get involved in this, and how long have you been in the gambling world?
Yeah, I mean, so I didn't really do much back in college, and I'm always like looking for kind of side hustles, and I was like, hey, you know, be a really cool side hustle is if I could like actually make some money gambling. Because it'd be fun, because I love college football and college basketball too. But like, you know, what if I could actually be good and make some money that way? You know, like I said, I started the business, and I'm like, you know, I've done various other things to kind of get some extra cash here and there. So it just seemed like a good, you know, turning hobby into money would be pretty sweet.
Definitely. So how long did it take you from when you started doing this to start producing your numbers, right? How long did it take from the time for you confident saying, hey, I'm going to start throwing these out there, start trying to share my work with the rest of the world?
Yeah. So I started making like an actual spreadsheet and doing nerdy things back in like 2017-ish.
Okay.
You know, it was rough. It was like an Excel or a Google sheet with like horrible formulas and like all that stuff.
We all start somewhere.
So yeah. But that was at the time where I was like, hey, this is like, once I started tracking, I was like, this is actually like pretty decent. Like the numbers weren't close, but I was hitting decent like against the spread. And so I just kind of formed from there, and I kind of got it up, got it better, like cleaned it up a little bit. And then I think I joined Twitter in maybe like 2021 and started actually putting the stuff out there. And then I've always tried to be like, I was going to talk about this a little bit. I can touch on it now. Like I kind of have a love hate relationship with like my handle sometimes. Cause like, I'm a little bit more focused than some people, and like Kelly, obviously, right, on like the betting side of things, because that's how I track my performance at the end of the day. That's like what I want. I want to be good, like against the spread. But I, at the end of the day, like I love talking about football, and I think my handle can kind of put people off sometimes, just because it says, you know, room 44 bets up there, right? But it is what it is. So like, I dabble in best bets here and there. Like I'm starting to do some this week, just like if I think that I have an edge, want to put it out there for people. But like, I really want to be like more data points for people to have for their own analysis. You know, like I bet my own money. If I'm good enough, I'll make it. I'll keep that side hustle worth it without having to like charge people, which like comes with way more stress and pressure that I just like really don't need or want ever, mm-hmm. probably. So, you know.
Well, you and Kelly both, right? And all the guys out there in the industry, you were doing the hard work, right? The legwork for us gamblers out there who aren't smart enough or putting in the time to do those things. You provide a great service, right? And looking at your numbers and Kelly's numbers and all these other guys that we've had on the show, it really does do, you know, it really helps in our process, right? Because no matter what, yeah. is how confident you are to see in any particular game or you think you got a surefire winner there. If you go look at numbers and I see you and Kelly both agree that I'm 3, 4, 5 points off on a spread here, right? You're going to second guess yourself. And ultimately, at the end of the day, us gamblers, we're the ones putting our money down, right? It's our decision. Blaming other people, getting mad at people for posting picks, I think that's ridiculous online, right? It's childish. You're the one who placed the bet. But it really is a great service. And people, you know, like you guys doing the work behind the scenes, you guys deserve a lot, you know, a lot of credit because you do help a lot of us with that, right? You're always providing the information for guys like me who are trying to soak up as much as possible. It's great to have guys like you out there in the industry. So I guess my final question for you, Nick, is a little bit away from everything. And just because I have some experience down in Tuscaloosa, I've been to a couple games down at Bryant-Denny. I really do love the campus, right? I dog on the Alabama football team, but it's just because my buddies are obnoxious, right? And you get sick of them winning every year and hear the same thing year in and year out. But what's your favorite Alabama memory? What's the best game you went to down in Tuscaloosa?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. So, oh man. All right. So I went to a game. I don't think I was even in school yet. This is going to be really embarrassing because I can't remember the year, but it was a Tennessee game. And it was the game where Tennessee was like driving down the field at the end of the game and actually fumbled out of the back of the end zone. And like, you know, that's like the worst rule in football, right?
I tweeted about that last week.
But we benefited from it that day and ended up winning. And so that one's like, because I was pretty young. I was like younger.
Impactful for young Nick right there, right?
Yeah. I like can't remember what game it was. But and every time they played Rocky Top, like they screwed up, which was also awesome. You know, they bring like their little band and we stick them like way up in the corner and then they would like, and then they'd like fumble or throw an interception or something. So it was pretty great. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I also went to a game with my dad when I was super, like, I don't know how old I was, but we were like way in the upper deck and I was like, hey, you know, I'm at a football game. This is awesome. And then they did a flyover, and since we were in the upper deck, like, I swear you could, like, you felt like you could reach out and touch the plane. And I was like, you know what? I'm so glad we're in this upper deck. And apparently, like, the myth is that they, like, flew way lower than they were supposed to. And the people, like, in the Air Force got, like, in trouble for it and everything. But, I mean, you know, just, like, going to games. I can't wait to, like, bring my son to a game when he's a little bit older and he can actually make it through and appreciate it. But it's, you know. It's just great, especially when you go there as a kid.
Yep, growing up, family memories. Like you said, going to a game with your dad, can't beat that. Absolutely can't beat that.
The two memories right there. One's a rivalry, which I can't get enough of in college football, so it makes it special. The other one is a family memory that you have with someone, a dad, parent, whoever it is that you're going to games with and that you're enjoying with. It's college football, man. Like, I'm not trying to get too sappy, but that's college football. That's why we love it. It's great. Nick, those are awesome.
It's beautiful
things. Those are awesome. Beautiful things. Awesome stories. I got one more question before we get into picking some games here, because I'm very curious to see how our models are viewing all of these big-time matchups in week 4. Gosh, there's some big ones. But before we get to it, We've seen 3 weeks of college football plus the week zero appetizer. We're a quarter of the way through the 2023 college football season, which, guys, like, whoa, let that sink in for a second. We wait all year, and now we're a quarter of the way through. Okay, let's slow down. Let's enjoy this.
Now you're really bringing
it. I know, right? Like, let's enjoy this thing. What has been the biggest surprise for you, or maybe not surprise, what's been the biggest takeaway for you, Nick, with your numbers to this point of the season? And then I will share mine after you share yours, because I wonder if we're the same.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say the Pac-12, you know, I think it just kind of goes to show, I'm not like trying to be like, oh, I'm super unbiased, but it's like the Pac-12 is awesome. It's like awesome to watch. They're playing great football over there. Honestly, you know, they've got the quarterback play that, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC has had recently that they just don't have this year. And it's just so much fun to watch, like, good football. Like, you know, part of the appeal of college football is that, like, it can be pretty crazy and, you know, crazy stuff can happen, but it's also fun to watch, like, really good players play really good games, you know. And like the Pac-12 is putting on a great product this year. I'm not going to get into the, you know, it's sad it's leaving, what it is, what it is, but like it's just been really surprising to me, like a really pleasant surprise.
I think the Pac-12 is my number two story. I absolutely love that, and it's great to see this conference going out with a bang. I absolutely love it. My biggest takeaway, Nick, so far is that we don't have a dominant team or set of teams at the top. You know, the last 10 years, the CFP era, we've had Alabama's right there in your backyard, or Clemson's, or Georgia's more recently, who have just separated from the pack. And they are just 3, 4, 5 points better on a neutral field than anybody else. We don't have that team this year. There is no team that's risen above. Teams are down from where they were in the preseason, but someone's got to be number one, as King and I talked about earlier. I have from number one, Ohio State, to number 11, Oregon, less than 7 points separating. The 6.9 points separates my number one team from my number 11 team on a neutral field. We have not seen that in the college football playoff era. I am excited about the potential for what that sets up the rest of this year, starting this week with Ohio State against Notre Dame in a game we're going to talk about, and all these other games. Anything can happen on any given Saturday in any given stadium, and we say that every year, but I mean it this year. There is no dominant team. Everybody's vulnerable. And I am very excited to get into the meat of conference season, which is what we are doing here in week 4. You guys ready to pick these biggest games?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Awesome. Let's get into it. We've got 6 that we're going to dive deep into. The first one, we're going to go in chronological order on Saturday, as we always do. The first one, we're starting off right at noon. Put this one on the big screen, the main screen in your setup. King, let's start with you. It's a game you wanted, and I don't blame you for it. It is Florida State on the road at Clemson. King, what are you making of this ACC game of the year, really?
Yeah, so Florida State, 2.5-point favorite on the road, over under 56 here. This is a massive game. This is a matchup that everybody had circled at the beginning of the season. We can be honest and say it lost a little bit of its luster when Clemson put up that dud performance week 1 versus Duke. We anticipated we'd have 2 undefeated teams coming into here, and there's still some question marks and some uncertainty with what we are going to get with both these teams here, right? Clemson primarily because their play probably hasn't reached the level that they expected this year thus far. Florida State just coming off a battle with a not a very good Boston College team, and there is some concern with Jordan Travis and his health coming into this game. He got banged up a little bit last week, hurt his non-throwing shoulder. Doesn't look like he's going to be 100% in this one, but still anticipate that Travis is going to get the reins here on Saturday. So I'm looking at this Florida State offense versus the Clemson defense, right? Despite the week 1 performance, the Clemson defense bounced back, performed pretty well these last few weeks. They're still currently sitting with a top 10 pass defense. That's going to be tested this week. They have not played an offense with the firepower that Florida State has, specifically with those wide receivers and Jordan Travis in the passing game. So we're going to look at this run game here, and the run defense for Clemson has been a little bit shaky thus far this year. They have some newcomers on that D-line. We knew they were going to be breaking them in, but with that Clemson linebacking crew, I am a little bit surprised they've struggled to stop the run as they have these first few weeks of the season. Florida State, team averaging 5.5 yards per carry on the ground. We saw what Riley Leonard did with his legs week 1 when they played Duke. Jordan Travis has that ability to scramble a little bit. Look for that to be an area in which FSU tries to exploit a little bit this week. Now, maybe that shoulder plays a little bit in a factor as to how much they really want Travis tucking the ball and running, but I think Clemson is going to have their hands full, and it's going to be tough to stop Florida State consistently in this game, right? And you look at that Clemson offense on the other side, the offense still has a long ways to go. It's improved the last few weeks. They've got the ground game going a little bit, but I am still concerned about this Clemson O-line. And you look at this Florida State front 7, that is filled with dudes, it's going to be a very tough matchup for this week. Florida State, very good at getting pressure on the QB. Klubnik and that wide receiving core are going to need to step up this week. That's where there is a gap. Florida State, 110th nationally right now in the passing game. This is how Clemson stays in this game. We haven't seen a whole lot from that side of the ball from Clemson this far. There's some question marks around how good that wide receiver room is. This is going to be the week for them to show it. Historically in this game, Clemson has had a lot of success versus Florida State. They have not lost to the Seminoles since 2014. It's in Death Valley. Their season's on the line. You can bet that they are going to come out ready to go this week. If this line gets up to 3, I'm probably going to take Clemson, but I still do lead in Florida State to win this one outright.
King, we've been doing this together too long. We didn't compare notes, but man, you took like almost all my talking points. I'm in agreement with you, dude, on a lot of the things you said. This is the ACC game of the year, as I talked about. We have had this one circled since the summer. I would have thought, you know, coming into the year, there was a decent chance that at least one of these teams would have a loss coming in. I didn't think it'd be Clemson, though, as you talked about, King, losing to Duke to open the year. Coming into this season, my numbers assigned a 62% chance for Clemson to make the ACC championship game, a 56% chance for Florida State. Those were the top two in the conference. And now, Seminoles are up to a 68% chance. The Tigers are all the way down at 10%. With a win here, Florida State jumps up to an 82% chance. A loss drops them to a 50-50 proposition. For Clemson, even with a win, only a 22% chance to make the conference championship game. They still have a tough schedule in front of them after this one. With a loss, guys, it's a 3% chance. It's just absolutely crazy that Clemson could be out of this thing before we even get to October. My numbers have Florida State minus 3. It's a 59% win expectancy for the Seminoles. King, I know you said you're waiting to see if it hits that number. That's where my numbers make it. There is a 32% chance that the average top 25 team would be 3-0 against Florida State's schedule. That's the second best in the country behind only Texas. The Seminoles are outscoring their opponents, guys, by 12.1 points per game, more than would be expected of the average top 25 team against the Noles schedule. When you combine those two things together, Florida State comes out as my number 2 team in the most deserving rankings behind only Texas this week. It's a great resume to date, and this is going to be a big test for Florida State on the road. I have Florida State power rated number 7. It's the number 9 offense in the country, number 21 defense. The only negative I can talk about with the Noles is their most recent form here, coming off of last week's game. By far, their worst performance of the year, a 31-29 win at Boston College. The Noles are down 4.7 points from a week ago. That's a massive drop. I mean, that's the second biggest drop I had in the power ratings this week. For Clemson, though, guys, there have been more negatives than positives this season. They entered the year number 7 in the power ratings with a top 20 offense. They lost to Duke by 21 before picking up home wins against FCS Charleston Southern and a weak FAU team. The offense has been downgraded to number 30. The defense, King, you talked about it. They've rebounded after a poor start. They're now back up into the top 10. Overall, I do have Clemson at number 15. This game should be strength on strength, guys. I'm looking forward to it. It's a top 10 Florida State offense against a top 10 Clemson defense. I do like the Seminoles' defense more than the Tigers' offense. This game's in Death Valley, though, and I expect that could make a difference. Although I gotta say, maybe not as much of a difference as at noon as it would have been if this game was later in the day. Clemson fans can't be happy about the networks deciding that this is going to be a noon game. Again, I got Florida State minus 3. It's a 41% chance that Clemson pulls off the upset at home. I'll say it again. Falling to 0-2 in conference play, that's a real possibility here. It's a knockout blow to the Tigers, and we have not even gotten to October. Nick, what do you think about this game?
Yeah, I mean, this game's obviously awesome. Like you said, like the ACC game of the year. King also stole a couple of my talking points, but I'll still touch on them a little bit because I think there's a little bit different flavor here. So first, I want to take a step back real quick and just explain for those who don't follow me. So I create graphics for every FBS game. They show a variety of stats. I'll talk about it throughout, you know, all these matchups. But I also have like a matchup section in the middle where I match up teams a total of 12 times. So 10 times for offense versus defense, for passing, rushing, total offense, defense, explosiveness, and success rate. And then there's one matchup for havoc rate and one matchup for team talent. So if I say something like Ohio State wins 10 of the 12 matchups, that's what I'm referring to. So anyway, I also have like a power index statistic, which is really just like a quick uniform way of showing how good or bad a team is at something. But I'm going to stick to mainly talking about rankings like Kelly does here, because it's just easier to grok without any kind of visuals, right? So anyway, getting into the actual matchup, I think the first thing that jumps out to me here is like King said, that the rushing, I have a rushing power index or the rushing ranking for Florida State at number 9. And then I had the defensive rushing at 71 for Clemson, which is super surprising. So I think, like, you know, we're all used to like the ridiculous defensive line players coming through Clemson that I think a lot of people just like assume that they're awesome, you know, against the run. But if you look at the numbers, they're definitely backsliding a little bit there, right? So it's definitely scary in this matchup. The total matchups are even at 6-6 with the two teams. But the other kind of couple key points I have Florida State at number 7 in offensive explosiveness. While Clemson is checks in at 106, not surprisingly, if you've been watching a couple of their most recent games. And so that's a big key. And I think the other one is points per opportunity. Florida State is at number 5. And then Clemson's at number 52. So I mean, I think all those things, I guess I completely forgot to go over the actual prediction. My model sped out Florida State minus 6 here. I'm kind of probably shy away from the totals because I'm still not super comfortable with my totals predictions this year so far. But yeah, Florida State minus 6 is a pretty big jump from the line.
Love it. No, we're all leaning Florida State, various levels there. I think this is part of our pick 'em competition that we'll get to later as well. So we'll get some confidence points assigned here too. Guys, if that's a big one in the ACC, here's a big one in the SEC West. We have Ole Miss going on the road to Alabama. I asked for this one, so I'll start with it. Guys, I have Alabama. Okay. I have Alabama by the model minus 5.5. With a 65% win expectancy. I think I'm seeing Alabama minus 6.5 actually in Vegas.
My line's 7 right now.
7? See, I'm a little surprised, to be completely honest, that the Vegas line is being more aggressive than me, because I saw mine was 5.5, and I was like, oh boy, because I've seen this Alabama team play. Guys, it must be said, this does not look like the Alabama team that we have seen for the past 15 years under Nick Saban. As I talked about earlier, this is the worst Alabama team in my power rating set since 2010. So we got issues here with Alabama. I have them power rated number 5. They're down 4 points from last week. It's the 4th biggest downgrade of the week, and they're down from number 1 just 2 weeks ago. They have the number 19 offense and the number 8 defense. Again, those numbers, as I talked about earlier, are going to continue to fall unless the level of play rises significantly as the in-season data replaces the preseason data. Even with all that in mind, guys, there is not a single game the rest of the way in which my numbers, the raw numbers, that is, make Alabama less than a field goal favorite. The model's slow to react. I firmly believe Alabama is an outlier in the negative direction, as I talked about earlier, something I have never said about an Alabama team before since I started doing the power ratings. The offense has been stagnant. The quarterback play has not been good, especially when Bryce Young, Mac Jones, Jalen Hurts, and Tua are the bar, right? Like, that's what you're being compared to here. Those are some really good college and now NFL quarterbacks. It's just not there. Ole Miss, on the other hand, they've looked really good. They've risen 6.6 points in the rating since the preseason. That's the 7th most in the country. There is only a 62% chance that the average top 25 team would be 3-0 against Ole Miss's schedule. That's the 10th best in the nation. Their relative scoring margin, 17.7 points per game better than the average top 25 team. That is 3rd best in the nation. That is how I have Ole Miss most deserving ranked number 7 in the country right now. So this is a team that has a really good resume, and they're really good from a power rating perspective too. This game is going to be high powered. I have Ole Miss power rated number 12. It's a top 10 offense, a top 25 defense. The unit matchups are pretty close. So essentially for me, guys, this basically boils down to home field advantage and maybe a little extra of the model saying this Alabama team is still being held up by preseason components here. So I have Alabama minus 5.5. It's a 35% chance for Ole Miss to pull off the upset on the road. And again, I'm pretty surprised that Vegas has it as bigger than I do. Currently, Alabama with a 41% chance to win the West. They get the win here, it jumps to 52. They take a loss, and it drops to 21%. Ole Miss currently at 15% chance to make it to Atlanta. With a win, it's up to 32%. With a loss, it is down to 6. Zach, it's coming to you next because I know you love talking about Alabama. We want to let Nick back clean up here for us and bring us home on the Alabama talk.
Yeah, I just want to say that I think benching Milroe last weekend was one of the more questionable decisions that Nick Saban has made in his coaching tenure there. And I'm not one to question Nick Saban, to be honest, but I understand Milroe did not play well against Texas. It was pretty bad. He missed quite a few open throws down the field. But as I texted my Alabama buddies last week, if you were going to Tyler Buchner as your quarterback, you're in some trouble. And I was shocked that one of these two younger guys, whether it be Ty Simpson or Lonergan, didn't get more look, right? I mean, obviously we saw Ty Simpson in the game. He didn't perform very well last week. I'm a little bit surprised we're not seeing more out of those guys. But I think that decision last week to bench Milroe, a little bit questionable, especially after just one bad game. We saw what he did week one versus Middle Tennessee. So I think bringing him back this week is going to be good for this Alabama team. And if you're looking at these SEC West matchups, I don't think you could ask for a better game in the SEC to bring Milroe back than at home versus Ole Miss, because there are still holes on this Ole Miss defense. They're going to try and keep Milroe in the pocket. That's exactly what Tex did, make him execute from there. But I think the Bama O-line, although I read some damning stats on this program earlier, the Bama O-line has its problems in itself. But I still think I like the matchup versus an Ole Miss D-line that doesn't really do too much for me right now, right? So it come down to Milroe making the throws. I think they're going to be there. I think the Bama wide receivers are better than last year. So I think there's going to be opportunities for them to push this ball against that Ole Miss secondary. And then Bama, as they've done these last few years, they're going to try and put the load on the defense. Explosive plays have been a problem for this Bama defense, though. They're very good, very sound. I like the front seven, but when they don't get pressure and allow quarterbacks to roll out of the pocket and keep time, they have been susceptible to letting up major pass plays. And it's a little bit different Ole Miss offense this year. Last year, top five nationally in the run. They've still got a stud in Quinshon Jenkins. Jackson Dart, not afraid to put his... you know, not afraid to put his head down and make some plays with his legs as well, but they are not quite as dominant thus far this year in the run. They're throwing the ball a much more. And so I look at that matchup versus that Alabama secondary is very interesting this week. I think the key for the Tide is going to be to get pressure on Dart. They can't allow those explosive plays. So I am confident Bama gets it done this week. I also don't think if I would lay the 7 points with them, but I like them in the bounce back this week. I don't see Saban losing at home again. I think Milroe's going to get rally a little bit behind his teammates. I expect a better game with him. You can't rule out the fact that Saban's obviously very familiar with that Pete Golding defense down there. So I think the edge with the Tide this week is with them. So I do think they get the job done at home, but I'm not going to lay the points.
Nick, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I wouldn't touch Alabama with a 10-foot pole right now. They're obviously a head case. Like I can't believe I'm saying, like, to stick around with a very, very good Texas team and then to look the way they did against South Florida, like, you never, like, there's no way of knowing, like, what you're going to get right now, I feel like. The quarterback play was awful. Like, the conditions weren't great, but, I mean, there's, you know, you could play underwater and throw better passes than some of the ones that we saw, right? Like, it was just bad. Josh Pate threw out a thing. He's like, he thinks Milroe is suspended. It kind of dawned on me. I was like, maybe so. Like, that seems like a logical explanation because nothing else makes sense why he didn't see the field at all. But I mean, I don't know. Like, to get into the model though, the model says Alabama -9 again. Wouldn't touch it. They are going down. Like, they're going down offensively, at least. They're going down pretty significantly. I have them as a 30th rated offense right now. Defense is pretty good. I have them at 6th right now. The big one is they're 8th in passing, right? So I think that bodes well for this particular matchup. Ole Miss has historically been a good running team, but like you said, like this year, I think they're trying to pass it a little bit more. But it'll be interesting to see how that matchup plays out in the air. And I think on the other side, like, the rushing game has got to be Alabama's bread and butter for the rest of the season, right? If they're going to have any kind of success, and then obviously getting Milroe involved in that as well, get the offensive line comfortable. I think it'll be really interesting to see how Golding plays it with his old team. If he has two down linemen like he used to do for Alabama before, you know, maybe he'll do that and we'll have some success. But like I said, I feel like it's just a Jekyll and Hyde, which is so crazy to say about a Saban team. But that's where we are, at least right now. I think a couple of key stats that I noticed when looking at the matchups here on the Ole Miss side mainly, is their explosiveness numbers are actually pretty surprisingly low. I've got them 111th in offensive explosiveness. And then their points per opportunity also is pretty surprisingly low. I've got them 103rd in points per opportunity. Maybe that's from a little bit of a hangover from last year with Kiffin going for it on fourth down and like opponents 20 yard lines and stuff. But you know, I think those are some key numbers in this matchup, right? But I mean, if Alabama plays like they did against South Florida, Kiffin's going to, you know, put up a 50 point game on him, you know, so they better come ready to play.
This is potentially a season defining game really on both sides here, but especially for Alabama having already taken that L on the resume. Guys, this is a part of the pick 'em. We're going to get to confidence points on this one later. I don't know where I'm going yet, to be completely honest. I got to think about it some more. King, this next game, I love conference play, guys. Every single game feels so big, especially in a week like this, still early in the year. Everyone's season goal is still in front of them. King, you asked for this one. I'm glad you did. Let's talk about UCLA going on the road to Utah. It's going to be a good one.
Going to be a good one, and this is a great jersey game, in my opinion. Got to love the UCLA blue, Utah red. So this is one I'm very much looking forward to. And this is a series. Utah dominated this game for basically the last decade or so. UCLA ended up getting one last year in a high-scoring bout. Almost, I don't know if we're going to get 80 points like last year, but I have a feeling that both these teams are going to find ways to score in this game. So we'll start with UCLA. The offense has been very good to start this year. And of course, in week one, as anticipated, if there was a guy that was going to be upset with the new clock rules, of course it was going to be Chip Kelly, commenting that he was upset that they didn't get enough drives, get enough possessions. So that's right. That's right. Come to what we come to expect from Chip Kelly, right from there, rightfully so. But this is still a team, still an offense that's averaging over 40 points per game. They're top 10 in total offense in the country. And they really have this run game going again after losing Zach Charbonnet last year, right? And that, you know, matching up with the Utah team that's sitting top 20 in defense. They've been very good against the run this year. They've excelled on third down. Teams are only 7 of 35 on third down against Utah thus far this year. That's a recipe for success. If you can get teams off the field on third down with your defense, you're going to put yourself in position to win a lot of these games. And so even as good as Utah's been, though, I still think I like the UCLA O-line enough to be able to hold their own and allow them to move the ball that they want to against this Utah defense, right? So there's no doubt Utah is going to make some critical stops, but ultimately I do think UCLA has enough firepower on that side of the ball. I'm a big fan of Dante Moore, freshman QB. He's been great. He has not had a test like this up until this point, but I do believe in Chip Kelly's ability to put him in good spots. He's athletic to make plays with his feet, seems to be making the right read. So if he takes care of this football, I think UCLA is going to score some points. Utah quarterback on the other side, still uncertain. Doesn't look like we're going to get Cam Rising. Looks like Nate Johnson is kind of the guy that's filled into that spot. He's gotten the job done for them. Dual threat guy. Hasn't really shown the ability to make the throws downfield. Utah's game, they're going to try and rely on the time of possession, slow this one down, make UCLA, or try and run the ball, make UCLA play from behind the sticks here. So Utah currently averages 6.5 yards per carry on the ground. UCLA defense, very good up front. They've done an excellent job getting after the QB. And with a guy like Nate Johnson there, if UCLA can create pressure, make him uncomfortable, I like UCLA to keep this one close. I'm going to be honest. I am getting all over UCLA plus 4.5 in this one. I'll talk about if I pick them later because this is a pick 'em game outright. But I like the matchup here for UCLA. I think Utah is still a little bit limited without Cam Rising. And I've seen enough from the Bruins this year that I don't think there's any doubt that this is going to be a close game. So I'm taking the Bruins to cover this week. I'll give you my pick there at the end.
All right, Nick, let's go to you. What do you make of this one?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this one too. When Kelly reached out to me to ask what game I wanted to do, I was like, UCLA, Utah. And he was like, hey man, that one's already on the docket. You need to pick that one. I was like, oh, okay. Sorry. But yeah, so this is one of my models wrong team favored picks this week. Model has UCLA -3, so I picked them up at +165. So into the matchup, I've got Utah's defense rated 51 overall, so not as good as kind of what we kind of have in our head, at least what I would have thought. I have them number 8, though, rushing, right? So I have them 8th ranked rushing defense, but 67th against the pass. So I think this is where I'm kind of making myself a little bit nervous when I think about, I've got UCLA rated number 4 in rushing offense. So like we got number 4 against number 8, right? And then you say, well, okay, but Utah's 67th in the pass, right? So they have some vulnerability there. But I think in terms of like a Chip Kelly offense, it does make me a little bit nervous to like potentially have a little bit of a stuffed run to get to like maybe not get those, you know, those passing yards that we're kind of used to them seeing when they're really cooking on the ground and they can, you know, do some things to the air because of that. Almost like an option team, right? Like run, and then take a shot kind of thing. But I mean, we'll see. Like I said, I'm going with the model. I'm riding with it. I think the big key that made me feel better about this is that UCLA, I have them ranked 10th in rush defense, which is a surprisingly high number, but they've been playing really well on defense this year. And I think that bodes well for, a Utah team that's still working on quarterback. Even if Cam Rising, walks through the smoke and comes in, he hadn't played in however long. Right. So, those are my main points here. Overall, I've got UCLA winning 8 of the 12 matchups too. So just like high level view, I feel like everything looks really good for UCLA here.
Man, you guys are making me nervous. I have Utah -3.5, a little bit less than the spread, 60% win expectancy. Guys, there's a 55% chance that the average top 25 team would be 3-0 against Utah's schedule. That's 5th best in the country, and a large reason why Utah is number 6 in my most deserving rankings this week. The Utes are down a little bit less than a point in my ratings, from number 15 in the preseason to number 17 currently. The offense has been worse than expected, falling from number 12 to number 28, but that makes sense with no Cam Rising. Coming into the year, the model is viewing a fully healthy and available Cam Rising. We knew there were questions, but he wasn't officially ruled out, you'll remember, for that Florida game until a couple days before. The defense has been better. So, Nick, I was curious to hear what you had to say about this defense. I think you said you had them in the 50s, maybe. I have this defense by my numbers. They've risen from number 22 in the preseason. They're now number 11 in my numbers, which is the best in the Pac-12. So we do have some discrepancy there between our models. UCLA has been a pleasant surprise in the Pac-12. They've improved their power rating nearly 4.5 points. They've risen from 31 in the preseason to 22 currently. The offense is now top 10, but it's the defense that's been much better than I expected. They were 66 to start the year. They are now all the way up into the top 30. This is strength versus strength once again for me. The number 10 UCLA offense versus the number 11 Utah defense, and it's evenly matched on the other side too. The number 28 Utah offense, the number 27 UCLA defense. For me, the difference is the location of this game. It is in Salt Lake City. I have Utah -3.5. It's a 40% chance UCLA pulls off the upset on the road. Guys, right now, currently, I've just said Utah for me is the better team. I'm picking them to win this game. But because when you're looking at the schedules and how things set up for these two teams within the conference respectively, I actually have UCLA right now with a better chance to make the conference championship game. It's a 19% chance currently. They get this win, it jumps up to a 32% chance, a 1-in-3 chance that the Bruins are in Las Vegas if they win this game. That's pretty crazy. A 10% chance with a loss. Utah currently at 9%. A win here would do them a little bit of good, up to 13%. A loss drops them all the way down to 2%. That just speaks to the level of difficulty that this Utah, that the schedule is for this Utah team, as they have to play all the preseason contenders still on the Pac-12 slate. We're going to pick this one in the pick 'em, though, as King said. All right, Nick. Let's get to you here first on this game. This is our fan pick of the week. Every single week, I pick two games. King picked two games. Our guest gets to pick a game. Or in this case, Nick tries to pick a game that we already picked. I'm kidding, Nick, since you made a joke about it. I'm kidding. It was an exciting game. I don't blame you. So you picked a game. We're going to get to your pick soon. But we then put out something out on Twitter. Say, hey, here are the next four games in terms of the highest ratings and my watchability scores. You guys pick the one that you want us to talk about. I'm excited about the one they picked, guys. They picked Oregon State at Washington State. Someone even termed it the Pac-2 championship game. I kind of like it. Hey, have some fun during this last year while we can. I'm nervous for these teams, sad for these teams, their programs be in 2024 and beyond, but I'm enjoying what they're doing here in 2023, both off to 3-0 start. So, Nick, let's have you go first with our fan pick of the week. It is Oregon State at Washington State.
Yeah, I have a dark sense of humor, so I like it too. Might as well embrace it. So I've actually got this one at Oregon State -1. So like, don't really have much of a lean on here. I think it kind of, like you said, the watchability is going to be super high on this one. I think it's like evenly matched teams, like a lot of intrigue. I think, you know, whoever wins this game could set themselves up to be kind of a dark horse, right? Like be a spoiler potentially. So, it's very interesting. I don't have a huge lean on the game. I've got Washington State ranked in the 60s in offense, while Oregon State is in the 30s on defense. And then kind of on the other side, I've got Oregon State in the 20s on offense, 22 on offense, and then Washington State 47 on defense. Nothing really stands out between rushing and passing between these two teams, other than I've got Washington State with a pretty low offensive rushing rating of 109, but they kind of make up for it with a higher passing in the 50s to bring them overall to the 60s. So anyway, all that to say, pretty evenly matched. I think the one thing that was kind of cool to me by looking at my numbers, so I run, something I do is I keep a yards per average or yards per attempt and yards per carry deviation. So basically, how consistent are you at hitting your yards per carry, yards per attempt? And both these teams are super consistent in one. Like Oregon State is third in yards per carry deviation, and then Washington State is fourth in yards per attempt deviation. It's pretty interesting, like both very consistent at what they do. The bad news for Washington State is that Oregon State has a much higher rushing ranking that they're very consistent with than Washington State is. But yeah, I think, like I said, I've got the total matchups at 8 for Oregon State and 4 for Washington State. So the only thing keeping the Washington State in here is home field advantage. So that's all I got.
I tend to agree with you on a lot of that, Nick. Both these teams look really good in the resumes so far. Oregon State, most deserving, number 22. Washington State, number 16. Washington State has the number 13 best record achievement. Oregon State's at number 26. Oregon State outscoring its opponents by 8.6 more points per game than the average top 25 team would be expected to. That's 11th in the country. So both these teams have looked really good against the opponents that they played. And yes, you can make the case, you know, well, who have they played? Well, Washington State hosted Wisconsin. That's a pretty decent win that they've had. Outside of that, sure, you can come draw into question the quality of their opponents, but they've taken care of business and they've looked better than my model thought they would coming into this year. Both of these teams are improved. Oregon State came in as a top 25 team, kind of a dark horse team in the Pac-12. They're now up to number 19. Washington State came in, you know, middle of the pack, number 62 nationally. They're now up into the top 40. So they've seen a good improvement too. Oregon State, guys, for me, has the edge on both sides of the ball. 16 offense versus Washington State's number 29 defense. The Oregon State defense is number 20. The Washington State offense is number 34. So you have the advantage on both sides of the ball. The game is in Pullman. So that to me too, that's kind of where the differentiator is and what gives Washington State this chance here. But I have Oregon State minus 4.5. It's a 63% chance for the Beavers to get the win. Right now, as we're looking at it, Oregon State, give me one second, I got to pull it back up. Oregon State right now has a 13% chance to make the conference championship game. Washington State is down at a 2% chance. The winner here absolutely remains in that dark horse conversation, especially if it's Oregon State, as they have a bit of an easier conference schedule than Washington State. My numbers expect them to get it done, so I am going to look at Washington State in this one with a 37% chance that Washington State is able to get the upset at home, but I expect Oregon State to get it done. Kinger?
Yeah, I mean, looking at this, I'm tempted to bet Oregon State minus 3 on this one. I've held off thus far. It's on the road in Pullman, like you said. Washington State, they play pretty good defense. Offense has been a nice surprise thus far. Washington State won 7 in this series up until last year. So I do agree with you, Kelly. I think Oregon State is the better unit here on both sides of the ball, and where I think the real advantage comes for the Beavers is going to be in the trenches. And I'm not sure that Washington State has the bodies to fight for an entire game here. I am more optimistic about their defensive front, led by Ron Stone Jr. This is a guy that I brought up a couple times in this podcast. Now, they're very good at getting some pressure. I expect them to put some heat on DJU and slow the run game at times. This is a top unit, top 30 unit, only allowing 91 yards per game, but to consistently do that versus this Oregon State offense that is exceptional at running the football, I think Oregon State has the advantage there, right? And I think on the other side, I think Washington State's offensive line is a big question mark. I think they're going to have their work cut out for them this week. Washington State, they are humming right now on offense behind Cam Ward. This is top 10 unit nationally right now, but it's mainly been led by the passing attack, and they've really struggled to run the ball. Oregon State hasn't necessarily been great on defense thus far, but they do get after the QB. They're top 10 at sacks, and I like that D-line in that matchup again versus that Cougar offensive line. So if Oregon State has the ability to control the game, they get that run game going, I think this is going to get ugly quickly. I am hesitant again because Washington State's a team that does have the ability to burn you. They seem to compete in games. I am high on their coach out there, but in this one, I think Oregon State is going to get it done.
All right, guys, we are moving on to the biggest game of the week by a lot of different metrics, including my own. It is the number 2 highest rated game of the entire season by my watchability scores. It is only behind the Red River Shootout. Currently, I am talking about Ohio State on the road at Notre Dame. I'm nervous for this one. I'm an Ohio State fan. Not feeling great. I'm feeling a little bit better than I was a week ago at this time after watching what Ohio State was able to do at home to Western Kentucky, but man, this is a big game, and we're going to find out what both of these teams are all about. One of them is going to come out looking really, really good. The other one's going to have to lick their wounds and get ready for a lot of battles down the stretch, because both these teams have big games even after this one. Huge feather in the cap to the winner here. This is the third straight week, guys, that I've had a new number one team in my power ratings. It's truly feeling a bit like nobody wants this to be the best team in college football this year, which, again, we haven't said in the college football playoff era, as we talked about earlier. This week, I have the Buckeyes in the number one spot. I have Ohio State minus 6.5 with a 67% win expectancy in this one. The Buckeyes have the number four offense. It's behind three Pac-12 units, and the defense has been a very impressive number five. But actually, believe it or not, that's only the fourth best in the Big Ten and the third best in their own division. I have both Penn State and Michigan, along with Iowa, power rated on defense in the top five as well. Ohio State is outscoring its opponents by 13.5 points per game more than would be expected of the average top 25 team. That's sixth best in the country. That is aided largely by the 63-10 win against Western at home this past weekend. This game is currently projecting, I struggle to say this, because this game is currently projecting as Ohio State's most difficult of the entire season. Do I think that it's going to end up being more difficult than the game against Penn State at home or the game at Michigan at the end of the year? I don't know, but that's what the model is saying right now. It's close, but that's what the model is saying right now. This Notre Dame team is no joke. If we get the Kyle McCord and Buckeye offense that we got against Western last week, I don't think the Irish are going to be able to get enough stops and keep up with this offense. On the other side, if Notre Dame, who has the number six offense and the number nine defense, is able to do what they've done consistently throughout this year, put that with the home field advantage, and I fully expect Notre Dame to be able to keep up in this game. All four units are top 10 nationally. It's just a phenomenal matchup every way you look at it, guys. The Irish are 3 points better now than they were projecting to be in the preseason. Their corresponding ranking is actually one spot lower than it was in the preseason. They're now number 13, but again, rating is up. That's the good news for the Irish fans. Don't worry so much about the ranking. Very little separates these teams based on the in-season data alone. The Buckeyes are going to get the edge, though, when we factor in the preseason priors, even with this game being in South Bend. So I have Ohio State minus 6.5. I know the line's more like 3, 2.5 or 3. 33% chance that Notre Dame pulls off the upset at home and registers one of the best wins of the season so far. Nick, what do you make of this game? It's huge.
Yeah, this game is awesome. Really looking forward to this one. I am kind of surprised. So my model says Ohio State minus 3. So basically right on the line. If I covered that up and looked at my matchup card, I would have guessed probably closer to your 6, but there's something in here that the model likes. The thing about machine learning is it's a black box. I can't know what factors. I don't know what it is, but anecdotally I've seen over the years, it seems like there's kind of a little bit of a passing game doesn't necessarily travel kind of component into things like this against, better defenses and that kind of thing. But I've got Ohio State number one as well. And I've got Notre Dame ranked number 3 overall. I will say I phased my 2022 data out over the course of 4 games. So Ohio State right now has 2 games in. I don't have I don't count FCS games ever, but Ohio State's 2 games in. Notre Dame has 3 games in, right? So Notre Dame has the benefit of 3 awesome-looking games to Ohio State's 2, which has really helped them in this matchup, I think. But I've got Ohio State as the number 3 rated offense, and then Notre Dame is the 13th rated defense, and then Notre Dame as the 6th rated offense. I don't remember the last time, I could really say that. And, probably one of the best quarterback running back duos in college football right now. Mm-hmm. And, maybe we could say the same about Ohio State in, 6 more weeks, but this being so early in the season, it's definitely a question mark, right? So, this is really, really cool matchup. But going to what I said at the beginning about being surprised that the model is not higher, is Ohio State wins 10 out of the 12 matchups that I have for this one. Nothing convincingly other than the passing offense versus the passing defense, just because the passing offense is so good. But it's a lot. It's a lot of matchups to win for such a tight spread. I think the other main thing is I've got Ohio State as number one in offensive success and number one in offensive points per opportunity. So again, Notre Dame does counter with 9th offensive success and and number three offensive points per opportunity. So they're getting right up there with the elite offenses. You know, like the Happy Gilmore, like, uh-oh, Happy learned how to punt. Like, uh-oh, Notre Dame has a quarterback. Like, that's what we're looking at, right? Like,
that's awesome.
It'll be really, really fun to see this game, how it plays out.
Zach, what do you make of this one?
Yeah, this is a 10 out of 10 excitement level for me. And these are two teams that I arguably are up there with my most hated teams in all of college football. So that says something about it. It doesn't matter how much you dislike these teams. You can't help but get excited for a matchup. I think the big thing lingering over these programs is you know, Ryan Day hasn't really been able to win some of these key matchups over these last few years. Notre Dame, historically, that's been the same narrative with them. Can they win these big games? Both these teams have struggled. This is a massive game this week. Ohio State's probably going to be in the college football playoff conversation at the end of this year. Notre Dame wins this one this week, and they are absolutely right in that discussion. So, Notre Dame offense. Nick, you took a lot of what I said here, right? Hartman brings a different level of quarterback play that they've had in years past. Esme is a great talent out of the backfield. He's been very impressive with me this far. Honestly, much more impressive than I would have anticipated. I think this Notre Dame offensive line has been better in this matchup versus Jim Knowles' defense, which is also steadily improving this year. Ohio State, looking back at their team last year, I think that was an area where they really wanted to improve on. Thus far this year, they look like they've accomplished that goal. They've been very solid. They're contributing on the scoreboard as well. Two defensive touchdowns last week versus Western Kentucky, and I'm looking forward to see what they are made of this week versus a quality opponent. The one thing that still concerns me a little bit with Ohio State is that pass rush. They haven't had elite numbers thus far this year versus that good Notre Dame offensive line, and I think the same thing can be said, you know, when you flip it around and look in that Notre Dame defense as well. So they've struggled at times to put some pressure on the quarterback. You look at that game last week, Central Michigan did move it pretty well on them at times. They could be in a look-ahead moment last week. They still got the job done. Ohio State lost both their starting tackles last year. There's still some unproven folks there on that offensive line. You look at Kyle McCord, who week one struggled, been better. Jury's still out on him, as you guys said, and I like that matchup. I think Notre Dame does have the guys in the secondary to challenge Ohio State at times. Ohio State has the best wide receiver room in the country. They're going to get their fair share of big plays, but I think Notre Dame does have enough defensively to make this a challenge. And so I like Marcus Freeman in this game. I think he's going to scheme up enough to make it uncomfortable for McCord. I made a mistake, guys. I looked this morning. I saw the line at +3.5 Notre Dame. I was going to bet it, said I'll get around to it later. That line slipped to 3. I'm still going to take Notre Dame in the points. I wish I had that hook there, but I'm going to take Notre Dame +3 this week. I'll give you my winner here in the pick 'em, Kelly, but I think this is going to be a great matchup and one that both these teams really need to win for the rest of the season.
It's going to be such a good game. King, you said it's a 10 out of 10. 9.8 out of 10 on my watchability. Second best of the entire season. It's going to be great. Let's wrap up our in-depth games with the one that Nick wanted to talk about. So, Nick, we're coming to you first. It's really a tale of two teams here, two seasons to this point. We have Texas at Baylor for the final time in the Big 12, barring some sort of miraculous turnaround for Baylor where they make the Big 12 championship game potentially. So here we go, Nick. Let's start with you. Texas at Baylor.
You never know in the Big 12, right?
You do not.
Yeah, I chose this game just because I really feel good about it from like my models perspective. I think it's an interesting game. I know it's, you know, probably off the radar a little bit with Baylor stumbling early in the season. But I think, you know, Texas is a really interesting team. Obviously, I watched that Alabama game very closely and was really impressed with Texas, right? And I'm always a little bit wary about taking road favorites. And actually, the model is not super far off of the line. Like, the line I have is 15.5 for Texas, and the model's predicting a little over 16. But I mean, just looking at the numbers here, it just seems like overwhelming in Texas' favor. It doesn't seem, it seems like a really good matchup. I've got Texas winning 11 out of the 12 matchups. The only one they're not winning is, their defense is a little bit vulnerable to explosive plays. Is Baylor equipped to take advantage of that is a big question mark. And that's the only matchup that I have been winning. I've got the projected yards per carry for Baylor at just over 3 yards, and then projected yards per attempt at 6.9. So that's not looking too hot. You know, the over under is predicted to be 55, but with looking at that defensive numbers for Texas, I've got them as number 16 defense. I've got Baylor as number 33 offense. And then I've got Texas as a 24 offense. I think a little bit of that is hangover from last year. You know, I mean, I've like I said before, I've got a lot of 2022 data in here still. And I think Sarkisian is finally getting comfortable with his team. I really expect that number to continue to rise. And so I've got Baylor as number 81 defense. So, I mean, it just seems overwhelming on both sides of the balls, unless Texas, I feel like Texas got their wake up call last week. They're going to come out focused. Sark is showing off again. I think all signs point to a Texas cover here.
Kinger, what about you?
Yeah, not a whole lot to add to that one. Baylor's in some trouble, unfortunately. I like Texas big in this one. And the main reason why is Baylor really has not shown that they've been able to stop anyone thus far this year. You talk about that Texas ground game, that offensive line, this Baylor defense, 105th nationally against the run. Their secondary is definitely the strength of this defense, but you would not call it good. They got carved up quite a bit week one, Texas State. And with the weapons that Ewers has on that offense, I don't see a lot of issues for Texas moving the ball. And offensively, Blake Chapin went down. He's not expected to play again this week for Baylor. They're rolling with Sawyer Robinson. He struggled this far this year. Baylor's obviously going to try and get the run game going, but I'm not sure there's going to be a ton of opportunities for the offense here. So Texas is going to try and make Sawyer Robinson beat them with his arm. I don't think he's going to have enough to get that done. Only 45% on the year completion percentage, 7 yards per throw, 1 touchdown, 3 interceptions. Just haven't seen it from him thus far. And maybe we'll be wrong. It is the Big 12. Anything can happen. But I'm not high on Baylor's success here. I think Texas gets it done.
Guys, these two teams quite literally could not have had more different seasons so far. I have Texas number one in my most deserving rankings with the most impressive record. Only a 13% chance the average top 25 team would be 3-0 against the Longhorns record. They're top 10 in relative scoring margin, while Baylor, they are minus 1.4. They have 1.4 fewer wins than expected to this point of the season. That ranks 133rd out of 133 FBS teams, dead last. No team has fallen short of win-loss expectations more to this point of the season than Baylor, and I don't see it getting much better in this one. My numbers like Texas by 17.5. It's an 89% win expectancy for the Longhorns. They're number 10 in the power ratings for me this week. The offense is top 15. The defense is top 10. Baylor, on the other hand, both units down since the season started. Baylor is down 8 points in my power rating since the beginning of the year. Only Arizona State and North Texas have fallen farther than the Baylor Bears from preseason power rating to current power rating. So they are third biggest fallers, biggest downgrades that I've had all year. They're number 64 nationally, barely better than FBS average. The offense is in the mid-50s. The defense is in the mid-70s. I just don't see a way. I like Dave Aranda, and you know they are at home, so maybe there's a chance. But it's an 11% chance, to be exact, by my numbers. I'm not buying it. Texas, to me, them and Oklahoma are the class of the Big 12 at this point. People will say, you say that every year, Kelly. Well, I haven't seen anything in 2023 that would make me feel otherwise to this point. But hey, we're getting into conference play. Let's see how it all shakes out, because it is exciting in the Big 12. And if Baylor's looking for a silver lining, they might be 1-2 overall with the worst start to the season relative to expectations of any team in the country. They're 0-0 in conference play. Everything still to play for, and that has to be the message that Dave Aranda is delivering in that Baylor locker room this week and this weekend before this game. So we will see, but those are the six games that we wanted to dive deep into. Zach, Nick, any quick hitters for games that we didn't already dive into or that we won't be touching on here upcoming in the pick 'em?
I got nothing for me this week. I got some bets and a couple quick things I'll comment, but nothing that I want to cover at the moment.
Yeah, I'll touch on probably some best bets that I made this week, but I don't, you know, I have every single game up. So, you know, anybody who's curious what the model says can go check it out.
Nick and I are on the same page. We got the websites. Hey, what game you want to talk about? Give me 2 seconds. I'll scroll to it, and then I'm ready to give you some analysis. The power of the website. I absolutely love it. Yeah, Nick, we're going to get to those best bets at the end. First, guys, let's get to our weekly pick'em competition. King, we talked about earlier, it's been a rough start for us. Neither one of us feeling too good about where we are, but hey, this is the week. We'll turn it around, right? That's the attitude we have to have. Nick, we're going to start with you on all these. What we're looking for is your straight up winner. We're not going against the spread. It's hard enough to pick straight up winners.
Yes,
we'll do the straight up winner and then the confidence points. 1 to 10, use every number once. 1 is your least confident. 10 is your most. We're going to start with an SEC West game. We have Auburn on the road at Texas A&M, Nick.
Yeah, I've actually, this is not because I'm an Alabama fan, but I've actually got Texas A&M, and I've got 10 confidence points on this one. This is based on what I have from the model. So We'll see what happens.
Hey, yo. All right, let's take it. Kinger, what about you?
I'm going to preface, guys. I'm about as least confident in these 10 picks this week as I've been in a long time in the pick'em. So we have no idea where we're going to get. I got A&M for 4 this week.
I am going to join you guys on A&M, and I am going to take the Aggies for 8. I like A&M by about 5.5. Yeah, a 5.5 point spread, only a 65% win expectancy. That's 8 confidence points this week, guys. All of these projected spreads by my numbers.
I don't feel so crazy.
Yeah, well, and by Vegas. I mean, these are close games that we're picking. King says he has no idea. Neither do I. We're throwing shots in the dark, just trying not to miss a 9 and a 10 like I have each of the last 2 weeks. Here's a game we broke down, Nick. Let's start with you. Florida State at Clemson. Who's your winner? How many points?
Yes, so I've got Florida State, and I've got it for 4.
Kinger?
Seminoles for 2.
I'm going to join you guys on Florida State, and how about this? I'm going to split the difference. I'm going to take Florida State for 3. We talked about this one as well. It's the one that Nick just cannot wait for. We're out in the Pac-12. We've got UCLA at Utah. Nick, who's your winner, and how many points?
All right, so I've got UCLA like I talked about. I've only got them for 3 confidence points because, you know, they are an underdog, but I've got UCLA.
Kinger?
I'm going to join Nick on that. UCLA for 3.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with the Vegas favorite and the favorite by my numbers because more times than not, that plays out. I hope I'm not wrong. Give me Utah, and I'm going to take them for 4 confidence points. Hopefully, you guys just gave me a +4 on the edge here. Otherwise, I will feel very silly. Doesn't matter. It's a great uniform game, as King talked about. We broke down this one as well. It's a big one. SEC West. Ole Miss at Alabama. Nick, it's your Crimson Tide. Are they going to get it done and get the win in T-Town?
I've got Alabama, and I've got them for 6. Personally, I feel about it like a 1, but I'm sticking by my model, so I've got them for 6 confidence points.
Kinger?
I got the SEC higher than I'd like this week, but I got Alabama for 9.
Wow, I thought for sure King was going to take Ole Miss just to stick it to Bama, a team that might be down. Okay, well, good. I don't feel as bad about this then. I thought about it some more throughout the episode. Guys, I say it every year, Kelly, deviate from the model. I'm a wimp. I can't do it. I'm going to take Alabama. I'm going to take them with 7 confidence points. So I'm kind of splitting the difference between you guys again there. A game we didn't talk about. We're in the Big 12 as Big 12 kicks off its conference play this week for the most part. We have BYU going on the road to Lawrence, Kansas to face the Jayhawks. Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, I've got Kansas, but I've only got it for 2 confidence points here.
Kinger?
I got the Jayhawks for 7.
All right, I'm actually going to go right there with you, Nick. I'm going to take Kansas. I'm going to take them for 2. My numbers like the Jayhawks by 2. It's a 56% win expectancy for Kansas at home in a game that should feature a lot of blue. We talked about this one. It is Oregon State going on the road to Washington State. Nick, who's your winner?
We got Oregon State for 1 whopping point.
There you go. The least confident. We had to come somewhere. Kinger, yep. What about you?
Oregon State for 6.
I will join you guys on the Oregon State train, and I will be a little bit closer to King. I'm going to take the Beavers for 5 points. Here we go. The game of the week. We broke it down. We have Ohio State going on the road to Notre Dame. Nick, let's hear it.
Yeah, I've got Ohio State for 8 confidence points.
Kinger?
The Irish are getting it done at home. I got Notre Dame for 1.
King's doing it just to rile me up. I'm not taking the bait. Guys, I hate to do this. I really, really do. I'm taking Ohio State. Don't think I'm going anywhere else, but I don't love what I'm doing. King, I have a bad habit of putting a big number on a game that I'm not very confident in. The model says it's 6.5. I know that's not what Vegas says. That's what the model says. A 67% win expectancy for the Buckeyes. Guys, it's the biggest projected spread of the week. I'm taking Ohio State for 10 points. King's already laughing. He goes, Kelly, you've just done it again.
I hope
so. But that's all right.
I hope so, man.
I'm rolling with it. This will be the one, King. They all make me mad. This will be the one, though, that I don't even care. I've just lost the points. If Ohio State loses this game, good luck bringing me out of the tailspin on Sunday. I'll just say it right now. And as we got the birthday party. The kids are having the birthday party on Sunday this week that we're hosting at our house. If Ohio State has just lost, by the way, my father-in-law is a big Notre Dame fan, Notre Dame alum. Ooh. I just realized that's going to be really awkward on Sunday no matter who wins because one of us is going to be really upset.
Kelly's going to have the flask inside, sneaking pulls if Ohio
State. I was
going
to say, maybe there. I hope there's White Claw there available there.
This is not going to be a fun Sunday. I don't care who it is because I can't rub it in my father-in-law's face. He's going to have no problem rubbing it in mine, and that's just going to really, really make me mad. Oh, gosh. All right, let's get back to the pick-em here. A game we did not talk about, but what I'm really excited about, guys, it's a neutral site game. I don't really get excited about neutral site games, but I just think the matchup here is really intriguing. We have Missouri and Memphis. I think this one's in St. Louis. Nick, who's your winner and how many points?
Yeah, I've got Missouri for 7. I don't feel great about it. I feel like they're probably in a letdown spot, but I'm rolling with the model.
Kinger?
You don't make me feel good about this either, Nick, but I got Missouri for 10. I also thought this game was in Columbia. I don't like my SEC squads at 9 and 10 there, but that's how we're rolling this week.
I'm going to take Missouri with you guys, but guys, I have this as -2, Missouri -2, 56% win probability. To me this week, that is my number one confident point assignment. So give me Missouri for 1 confidence point. A team coming off of a loss to that Missouri team that we just talked about. We have UCF going on the road to a Kansas State team that needs to rebound. Nick, what do you make of this one?
Yeah, so I've got, where is it? I've got Kansas State for 9. I, again, don't feel great about it just based on watching that game last week, but here we are.
Kinger, the Wildcats going to bounce back?
A lot of injuries in this one, guys. No John Rhys Plumlee for UCF. Will Howard's banged up for Kansas State as well. They lost their starting linebacker, all-conference linebacker, Daniel Green, last week. There's a lot of question marks in this game. I don't feel good about it either, but I'm taking the Wildcats for 5 and a bounce back.
I'm going to take Kansas State as well. I'll be in between you two. I'll take Kansas State for 6. My numbers like them in this one by 4.5 points at home. It's a 63% win expectancy. Our final game, guys, features two teams who have had two different types of seasons. North Carolina is 3-0. Pitt is 1-2, coming off 2 straight losses to what you would have to call rivals, Cincinnati and, of course, West Virginia in the backyard brawl. We've got North Carolina on the road at Pitt. Nick, what do you make of this one?
Yeah, I've got North Carolina for 5 confidence points.
Kinger?
Tar Heels for 8.
I am going to take North Carolina as well, guys, and I'm going to take them for 9 in this one. I like them by 5.5 points. It's a 66% win expectancy. Those are the pick'em games we agree on a lot. So we will see. Either we're all going to be very happy or we're all going to be pretty upset with various levels of anger depending on which game we assign the most points to there. King? Nick, you both are great when it comes to the best bets. King, I know you say you might be still finalizing the card. Anything you're ready to share right now? And then, Nick, we're coming to you as well, because we can't have someone on the podcast who is room 44 bets, and not get some best bets, right? So, King, let's start with you.
Yeah, we got 4 plays locked in. I told you guys I'm taking Notre Dame +3. I got UCLA +4.5. 2 other games that I'm on. I think this is the week that Colorado finally gets a little bit of a humbling up there in Eugene. I like that Oregon secondary versus that Colorado passing offense. I think the Oregon defensive line has a matchup advantage there as well. We saw the susceptibilities of Colorado's defense last week. That line's only sitting at 20.5. I think it's going to be more than that. I don't know how much, but I'm pretty comfortable laying the points 20.5 there. I also like, this might be a reaction to last week, but Syracuse is laying 13.5 at home versus Army this week. That Army offense, not very good. I've been very impressed with what I've seen with the Syracuse defense so far. I like their ability to stop the run in this one. I think that's a game people should take a look at as well. And I'm going to whisper something to you guys very quietly that you can't tell anybody else, but I'm going to tell you guys, Wisconsin -6.5 is a good bet on Friday night versus Purdue. I'm not going to bet it, but for all the gamblers out there that want to pick that I don't think, or that I think is we're not going to call anything a lock, but a pick that I like a lot this week, I think you got to take the Badgers Friday night in West Lafayette. I'm not going to do it because that's my team, but those are the lines I'm looking at right now. Cards still to be finalized.
I love it, King, bringing the objectivity to it, but not going as far as to betting it, because you can't do that to your Boilers. That is the ultimate respect. I love that. Nick, where are you at with some best bets this week? Anything you're willing to share?
Yeah. So I think I've got some best bets out. I think I'll just mention a couple ones I feel pretty good about here. Last week the model was I should have pulled it up in preparation. Last week the model was 69% with home favorites.
Hey-o.
So got some home favorites out there this week that I feel pretty good about just based on past performance. But so I've got Toledo -20. Feel really good that I've got the model. The model says -27 for that one.
Let me see real quick as you're going, Nick. Let me just pull up mine. I've got Toledo. Okay, I got Toledo -22. So I'm with you on that one. A little less confident, but I'm with you on that.
Yeah, and then I've got Duke. This is a road favorite, but still same. Duke by 27.5 versus a spread of 21.
I got 23.5. So again, I'm a little closer to Vegas, but I'm on the right side with you.
And then I've got Wake Forest minus 10, a little bit of a bounce back from last week, but feel good about that one.
What's the line in that one?
It is 3.5.
Okay, man, there's a trend here. I've got Wake Forest minus 5, so I'm on the right side of the line as you, but a little bit closer to it. But okay, I'm right there with you again.
And the last one I'm going to throw out there is I've got Louisiana minus 15. The line is 8, what I've got.
I got to scroll all the way down to the Sun Belt. It's at the bottom. You got a minus 15, the line's 8. How about this? I got a Louisiana minus 12, so I'll be right in between again, but again, on the right side. So, King, there you go. If you're looking for some things to add to the card,
that Wake Forest line, the Wake Forest line is one I looked at, and that's one we're going to strongly consider. We'll take a peek at the others as well.
There you go. We're in agreement on all those, Nick. I love to see that. Well, Nick, this has been awesome. We've really enjoyed having you on. Please take a second here. Remind everybody, where can they find your work? Plug your website, plug your Twitter, your X handle. Just let everyone know, because this has been an awesome conversation. I'm sure folks are going to want to go check you out.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Twitter handle or whatever we're calling it is at room44b. And then I've got room44bets.com is my website. Like I said earlier, I predict every FBS versus FBS matchup. Put those cards out there. You can peruse. There's plenty to digest in there. Hopefully it's all laid out clear enough to read it. I put out all my lines, try to either Sunday or Monday, and put out wrong team favored picks that have done pretty well historically. So yeah, really appreciate, like I said, being on the show. It was great.
Now, we appreciated having you, Nick. We're so glad you were able to make your podcasting debut with us here on We Hate Your Team. That's something that I really enjoy doing. We don't have you on or have any guest on because it's their first one, but after we start talking and we learn the history about what have they done, where have they been, and you share, this is my first one, that always makes me feel good, because Zach and I, we talked about doing a podcast for literally almost a decade before we ever did it. And what ultimately was the nudge was I got on a couple of different ones and decided, you know what, this is so much fun. You get exposed to it and you have a good time, and then it leads to something else. Or maybe it doesn't, but you still had a good experience doing it. King's got his first guest podcast appearance coming up later here this year over at Statistically Speaking with Kyle and Blinken, who we've had on. So it's just a really fun community of college football podcasters. We're very excited to give you your entryway into that, and we look forward to seeing what your future work holds. Guys, go ahead and check out Nick at the places that he just mentioned, the website, on Twitter, on X, whatever we're calling it, as he said. He's got really, really good stuff, someone we wanted to have on for a long time, and I'm glad we were able to make it happen. This has been a long episode, everybody. I think I referenced a couple times throughout that we had talked about earlier. I think based on how long we've gone, and then also what King and I recorded before, I think we're going to split it up, King. We're going to do kind of the rating breakdown separately from the podcast, so excuse any time that I said as we talked about before, because that's going to be its own standalone episode, I believe. But there was just so much to get to in a week 4 that is jam-packed of college football. Until next time, enjoy week 4 of the 2023 college football season. This has been the We Hate Your Team podcast, a proud member of the VSN Collegiate Network.